Blog Talk Radio.
There you hear. We've got the garage open late here on a Friday night as Frat House Sports here is bringing you a rare Friday night performance of the Racetrip Motorsports Hour. And this is what we normally do when, in fact, we've got ourselves a Saturday night race, which is what we have tomorrow night coming up at Kansas Speedway. Welcome in and thank you for joining us here on the Racetrip Motorsports Hour, our special Friday night edition. And it's a good one. I mean, look, we've got 10 races in the books now at this point. And I guess that thing we saw last week was a race. Some are calling it a demolition derby, a crash fest. Yeah, that's the word you keep seeing thrown around. We're going to talk a lot about what happened to Talladega because, well, for some reason or another, and I'm going to be perfectly blunt with you, I'm not quite sure why. There seemed to be an awful lot of people that were surprised by it. And yet, at the same time, I come away going, well, wait a minute, isn't that Talladega? Isn't that the way Talladega always has been? We're going to talk a lot about it because there were a lot of people that came out and had some comments about the fact that, well, what was it at the end? Over 30 vehicles incurred some sort of damage or another. 30 cars in the field. That's three quarters of them. 75% of the vehicles in the field were affected in one way or another by big ones here and there during the course of that race, which was, well, as I say, that's just Dega, isn't it, baby? I don't know. Amazingly, though, out of it came, yeah, one of my favorites, one of those pesky boys, Brad Keselowski. He won his second. He joined the four. I hear you. He became one of the four who are in the multi-win club now at this point. So we've got four drivers who have multiple wins within 10 races so far this evening or this season. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to get into all of the controversies that have surrounded everything that went on. And then, of course, we've got to take a look at what should probably be a somewhat more, I would think, docile 1.5-mile race out at Kansas Speedway than what we saw last week. To do all of that, we will be joined in. Okay, well, we're going to talk about it. We're going to be joined in here.
Let's think about a year ago. It will not be that docile.
Well, you'll have to refresh
especially
my
after
memory.
Last week.
You're going to have to refresh my memory. Listen, we will be joined in here by a special guest. If it's Friday night, that means we've got to get a visit from, Frat House Sports friend, because this will be his third appearance on one of our programs, and that's Chris Jerko Lee will be joining us from the NASCAR news source. And he'll be jumping in with us, as has been his habit now, on Friday evenings, which is his best night to get with us. So Friday nights, if we do a Friday night show, you can expect that we will probably have a visit from Christian Coley. And so he will be jumping in with us in here at about 7:30 or so, and we're going to get his thoughts on Talladega and perhaps some of the other things that we haven't had a chance to talk to him about since he was on with us the last time about 4 or 5 weeks ago. You know, we'll get talking Lug Nuts and Tony Stewart and Crybaby Clint Boyer and things like that. And we'll get his thoughts on all of that. Joining me, as you just heard, we got Sidekick and we got Brandon here. We're really not doing any work in the garage tonight, folks. We just got our feet up on the barrels. But you can jump in with us as well and chime in. If you call the garage, we will answer the phone, I promise. 347-826-9964 is how you can reach the garage. 347-826-9964. If you are on a computer and Skype capable, hit that little Skype button next to our name, and it should put you through to us loud and clear. Otherwise, you can leave a message in our Blog Talk Radio chat room, or better yet, hit me up on Twitter at Frat House Mike. At Frat House Mike is how you can get a hold of me on Twitter. All right, guys, we ready to rock and roll? I mean, this is going to be where this is. You're insinuating. Refresh my memory now that you're bringing up Kansas, because I'm not remembering it. Sidekick, refresh my memory. What can we? It would seem to me this is going to be more docile than what we saw last week.
Kansas was where Kenseth and Joey Logano got into it.
Well, they,
that's
they,
where that started
they,
up.
That's
last year.
Yeah, that's where that whole
that's where that whole thing started up last year was, with them. Them getting into each other's dander. And of course it's only fitting that, last week with Talladega, doesn't Matt Kenseth say, hey, I guess, with Joey thing, it's not water under the bridge kind of thing. So we'll have to see how Kansas goes.
I'm going to be honest with you, and I tried to. Of course, here was the problem, and you saw the clip, I'm sure, of Kenseth talking to talking to Logano after the fact. He's walking behind him there, and Logano's kind of like, it looked like he was leaning over a fence or something, chatting with the media. And Kenseth goes in behind him. I tried to get the audio. The problem was, and as you saw with so many of the clip sites, you probably didn't, maybe you didn't, I don't know, but I would think you did. The only way you were able to decipher what he was saying were through subtitles at the bottom. You can't hear it. So it was no good for radio. I couldn't get it for radio. I didn't understand Kenseth's comments. Basically he said to him, one of these days we're going to race honest. Now Logano had a parting shot at him as he's walking away, which was, all you had to do was, I think he said something to the effect of all you had to do was let us know and you could have been up front. So basically I think what Logano was saying was, if you wanted help, I would have given it to you. Huh? I don't buy Logano at all. Did you get a chance, Sidekick, perchance to see the clip that I'm talking about?
No, I had not seen it.
Okay. Did you see it?
I saw it live when we were watching post-race and,
But you didn't see the deciphered version of it afterwards? No. Okay.
I don't know what. It almost sounded like it stemmed from on track. So I'm wondering if Kenseth, had his panties in a bunch about something that happened, during the race.
Kenseth got pushed down on the apron.
Right.
Exactly.
But was it Logano who pushed him?
Yeah.
Well, that's what they're saying. It looked like Logano
pushed him down. Logano.
But the thing is, we don't know what actually happened.
And that was the wreck that caused the Kenseth to turn upside down and of course took Danica out.
My mind just went blank. Logano pushed Kenseth down on the apron. Kenseth, at that point then people are like, well, Kenseth is down on the apron, that should be a penalty. Well, then, he said, well, no, he got forced down there by Logano.
Yeah, it's only a penalty if he passes while below.
Right.
If you go down to save yourself from a wreck like that, you're okay. They don't
Well, exactly. But initially, the broadcasters were like, oh, hold on, is this going to be a penalty? You know, and then NASCAR came back and said, you know, no penalty, no harm, no foul on either drivers. Because you can also get a penalty. Logano could have been penalized for pushing him down there.
Correct.
Apparently. You know, so, but what happened was,
wasn't it on a restart? And when you've got that going on in a restrictor plate, you're going to get that pack sort of mentality, that pack driving that you get, and that's what happens. It's very difficult, in my opinion, to come down on a penalty on that when that's the way everybody's driving on a restart.
Well, right. But, see, what happened then was Kenseth goes and says, hey, you know, the whole reason I was in this wreck was because of what Logano did to me.
I'm going to be honest with you.
And that's, you were back where you were because of what happened with Logano, but saying that Logano was responsible for you flipping, you know, insinuating that, you know, the whole reason you flipped in the air was because of that whole Logano thing is kind of, you know, like, no. You happened to be in the right spot at the right time. You know what happened on the track, bleep, bleep, cow manure. And you wound up flipping. Now, you were there because of what happened with you getting pushed, forced down on the apron by Logano, but that did not cause that wreck. You know, what caused that wreck was Danica getting all wiggly, and shooting across and doing all that stuff. You know what I mean? So I just thought it was,
interesting. Go ahead, Brady.
It might just be, a little residual bad blood.
That's what it is.
Guys don't want to let it go.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you honestly what I saw. I saw what I just described, a restart. And when you get a restart, particularly in that type of an environment, expect it. This is what's going to happen. To me, I'm going to be honest with you. Here's one time I'm not going to take – I'm actually going to take Joey's side, and I'm not going to take a JGR side. To me, Matt Kent is wrong. That was racing. I didn't see – and did he get in behind him? Yeah, he got behind him and air and what have you, and that's what happens. The car flipped. It was a pretty nasty wreck. Kent was on his lid. Danica comes out afterward and says it was the worst wreck she's ever been involved in. So,
she took a hard hit, though.
She did look shook, I got to be honest.
Yeah. When they showed that replay, too, when her car hit the inside wall, the whole thing went airborne. You know, it wasn't a soft hit, even though she did hit, a safer barrier and, all that. You know, it was still a pretty hard impact. You know, I imagine that, they have things in the cars to record the G forces. I imagine that's going to be one of the harder ones you see, in a year. That was not a soft shot she took.
Mm-hmm.
I understand her being a little like she kind of had her bell rung a little, as they said. We're not allowed to say that, right? In that bell rung thing, we're not allowed to.
Yeah, we use it all the time, but apparently, we're told by one previous guest that's.
Yeah.
That's taboo,
bad terminology,
It has to stop me from saying it, but I'm old school. I'll just count myself as old school. I don't know. I'm not putting a black mark on Logano's name next to his name on that one. And if anything, it was funny because in the post-race conversation, and Brandon, I know you probably heard it because we saw it here. Matt comes out and Matt was the one who made reference to, I thought the whole Logano thing was over, So in other words, he was insinuating that Logano had it in for him. I frankly read it the other way. I think by Kenseth making more out of it than there was, I read into it that Kenseth has got something in for Logano, that he's still annoyed about it. That's just the way I read it.
Kenseth came off like a little whiner to me on that one. I'm sorry.
There you go.
I'm not a big Joey Logano fan. I think Logano more often than not looks like a piece of female anatomy, when he's talking, but not in this case. I think this was Kenseth came off looking, not the best, if you know what I mean.
Oh my goodness. All right. Well, let's do this real quick. I've got about a minute of sound from our folks over at NASCAR on Fox of the way that the last half, I guess actually last half lap, last quarter lap, I don't know what whatever it was, sounded. And of course we had one more major wreck that ended the whole darn thing. And well, here's how it sounded on Sunday.
Keselowski.
Big run coming from the 18. Oh, the
Kyle
three
Busch.
Out.
Dillon. Kyle Busch and Dillon saw trouble. Car hard in the wall. Two of them. Keselowski to the line. Caution has waved with Keselowski the leader. And crashing are Harvick, Allmendinger, Stenhouse, Truex, Labonte, and everybody else.
Good job today, Brad. That was you, man. Managing that.
I don't know how to explain this. I've never seen anything like this ever.
Upper left is the caution light. This is synced up with the video to establish the moment of caution into the tri-oval. Contact between Truex and Allmendinger, and then Cole Whitt turns Kevin Harvick up and into the wall, and Stenhouse and Allmendinger slides along and crashes with Truex. Caution is out. Race is effectively over. All drivers involved in the crash have exited their cars, and they are okay. Brad Keselowski taking home the checkered flag is today's Sunoco fueling victory.
And there you go, a little bit from NASCAR on Fox from Sunday. Just an ancillary comment. DW drives me nuts. I've never seen anything like that ever. Will you stop it? Just stop.
Yeah,
right?
I know,
just,
right?
Just about everything. Are you kidding me?
I've never seen
honest
what,
to
are you
God.
Blind?
I've never seen anything like that. Dude, you were on the track for how many stinking years? Stop it. Anyhow.
He caused a lot of that crap in his day. he for years, he was not the Mr. Nice Guy goofball we see on TV now.
Maybe that's why he didn't see it. It was all behind him, huh?
Yeah, right.
All right, well, so that was one of numerous wrecks that we saw on Sunday at Talladega. And we've had a litany, folks. Guys, we've had a litany of people that have stepped out and talked about this situation. You know,
they stepped
what can,
out like the three did?
I beg your pardon?
I said you said stepped out like the three did. When you hear Jeff
yes,
Gordon
exactly.
on the commentary say, oh, the three yes. just stepped out.
Yes, exactly. Kyle Busch weighed in. Let me see if I can grab up his comments here. Kyle was questioning why drivers were driving the way they were. Made the comment that actually referred to the drivers as being somewhat stupid. I think it was in
Idiot.
His comments. I think it was in his comments. Sidekick, correct me if I'm wrong. Where he actually said he wishes he wasn't there. He would prefer to sit at home and watch it on television. That he would prefer not to even drive this one. I think Dale made similar comments as well, saying something to the effect of, "Let me see if I can." I read it earlier today, and I don't know if I can actually put my. Let me see if I can actually find it or not. But a lot of different people coming out and talking about NASCAR, indicating that they're investigating the accidents. I got to bring this one up, and I want to get everybody's opinion on it because, look, you guys have been following this sport longer than I have. This is Talladega. What do they expect? I don't understand what the urgency suddenly is because of what happened on Sunday. Isn't this normal?
Well, I think the drivers, especially the more veteran guys like Kyle, and not that he's that old, but he's been around. Dale Jr. has been around for a while. I think they've seen it where you can run these big tracks and you know, not cause the kind of chaos we saw this Sunday. I think that's what they're referring to. I don't know. You know, we've seen NASCAR change the rule package to try to you know, keep the accidents under more control. I don't know what the answer is, what the drivers are looking for in this particular case, but we've heard other drivers say the same thing. Jeff Gordon's probably said the same thing. Mark Martin, when he was on his limited thing, never would run the big tracks anymore. I think a lot of the guys don't like running the tracks just because of the safety factor involved.
Well,
you know
apparently
what I mean?
Tony doesn't like running it either.
Yeah, I mean, you see what happens. How many horrible wrecks did we see?
So
yeah, right. How many horrible wrecks did we see, though? You know what I mean? There should be a way that they can run. I think the drivers need to, exhibit a little bit more self-control and a little more respect for each other on the track, I think, is the message that's trying to get sent.
Okay.
Let's try not to kill each other, essentially.
Doesn't that go contrary to just the internal response to be a competitor?
Not necessarily.
I think there's
a time and a place for aggression, and I think aggression is better kept in check at the restrictor plate track. You got to err on a little bit more side of caution, I think, is what some of the guys would like to see versus, hey, you want to beat and bang on somebody at, Bristol or Richmond or Martinsville or, even the mile and a half tracks, that's one thing because you're not going as fast and you don't see cars flipping over and, the kind of stuff we saw on Sunday. And I think that's where some of the comments come from. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if there's an easy answer, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Well, it was interesting this afternoon because as I was putting this program together, I'm out and I'm, looking for some images and what have you for the program. And I simply typed in Talladega Super Speedway, Rex. Okay, that's all I typed in. Google. Images. And guys, when you go back and take a look at it, it's not just this year. It's year after year. And you could get some really old ones of cars airborne, major wrecks going on. And that's why I'm saying this is just Dega, isn't it? Now, if you want to try to diminish some of this, well, then only have it on the calendar once a year as opposed to twice a year. How about that? Obviously NASCAR's got it on the calendar twice a year because, let's get it straight. Who wants it? The fans. That's who wants it. The fans want it. And that's why I'm just shocked, and I was a little bit surprised at the outpouring of comments this past week. I mean, are we going to go through this again during the chase when we got Talladega again? I guess we will. Everybody's going to come out and they're going to be, I don't know. I mean, I'm a little bit surprised by it. I don't know. Sidekick, jump in. What do you think?
It's Dega.
Exactly.
I mean, come on now. Part of the thing of why race fans, I obviously we don't want to see people hurt, but part of the fascination with watching auto racing is watching these big wrecks. I mean, it's like why people go to demolition derbies. There's a part of us that does like the train wreck aspect of it. You know what I mean? The thing is the restrictor plate tracks. Some years there's less wrecks, other years there's more wrecks. But, it's almost a foregone conclusion. Blah, 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 blah.
Foregone.
I better have another one of my best damn cherry colas.
Yeah, that'll help.
Pog and Heiser Bush. Thank you very much. There's the potential to have these huge wrecks. And, we were talking about, the cars getting airborne. And as much as we rag on NASCAR, the beauty of it is NASCAR is going to go back and they're going to go back to their mad scientist laboratory. And they're going to try and look at this and try to recreate it and figure out why in this particular instance, Matt Kenseth, you know, what were the factors that led to Matt Kenseth and Chris Buescher getting airborne? You know, is it, you know, I believe the cars are safer, but, you know, what led to them getting up in the air?
You Chris Buescher was not too happy after that race either.
Well, no, I'm sure he wasn't. You know, just like
when they interviewed
Danica,
him, he was like, he was kind of making similar comments to what Kyle said, more or less. It's like, yeah, I don't know if I want to do this.
Well, I mean,
they'll all be back, you know.
Well, right. It, you know, it's kind of like, then if that's how you feel, why are you in the sport?
Well, I think what it comes down to
Thank
is every
you.
Driver has tracks they really like and really don't.
Oh, and, I agree. You know, there's just some things, you know, like you said, there's, you know, some people, you know, some of the guys like to get on them road courses, you know, and they hate going to a Bristol. You know what I mean? And then, you know, but it's racing.
I you know, and that's kind of where I am as well. Denny Hamlin's comments, quote, as long as there are 20 cars in a 1 second pack, it's going to happen. We talk about this every 2 to 3 restrictor plate races. Well, they're exactly. Isn't that what I just said? There just is no fix because we haven't done it yet. We don't know. The only thing we can do from my standpoint and the ignorance I have is you have to slowest way down or speedest way up. You have to get spread apart. That's the only way you're not going to have these crazy crashes. Hamlin said drivers have been lobbying for lesser speeds as the better choice, but cautioned drivers would, quote, get more comfortable and give each other less room and wreck just as much by going slower.
Absolutely.
I disagree with him. I don't think slowing the cars down is going to do one little thing to keep them separated because it's all aerodynamics and draft. And if you make it slower and they have no horsepower to separate, it's going to be even worse. They'll all be sucked together. You know, the speed factor, they've tried this before by lessening the downforce and making it so that the cars could accelerate past each other, which is kind of where we are now. You don't see them, you know, to the point where they can't pass. Before, when they had higher downforce and bigger, you know, the cars were breaking bigger windows through the field, all you saw was giant packs and nobody could pass anybody. As soon as you pulled out, it was like you hit an air brake. So, you know, I totally disagree with him on that.
To Denny's defense here for a moment, I don't think, Brandon, that he's actually suggesting it. I think he's saying, what other choice could there be? Otherwise, there's no point to this conversation because he says later on, Hamlin said drivers have been lobbying, but cautioned. Hamlin cautioned drivers would, quote, get more comfortable and give each other less room and wreck just as much. So I think Hamlin recognizes exactly what you're saying. He's saying, if we're going to have this conversation, guess what, folks? There's only one way this can go. And that way is you're going to slow everybody down. Well, is that what we want? I think that's what I don't think Hamlin's suggesting that that's what they should do. I think what he's saying is, what other solution is there? Otherwise, there's no point to this conversation.
Right. You might be right. Maybe that's the way I'm reading. I hope he's not lobbying for it because we've been there, done that, and it didn't work, is my point. So, you know, I think NASCAR needs to – I don't know what they need to do. Yeah, you know, they try to make it – they try to keep the drivers in check by putting the, you know, the penalty and you can't go below the line, to, you know – yellow line to increase your position. But, you know, when it comes right down to it in the heat of the moment, that's when this kind of stuff happens. And, you know, only the guy behind the wheel, you know, can control, you know, the amount of aggression, how willing are you to put somebody else in danger, you know, that kind of thing. I don't think there's there needs to be a little more self-control, I think, is what some of the drivers are kind of getting at, that, you know, hey, this ain't the time and the place for that kind of aggression. You know, save it for the short track, save it for the intermediate size track. But, you know, I don't know if they're ever going to be a good answer.
I sense from the tenor and sentiment of Kyle Busch's comments that he was one of the ones that you're referring to, Brandon. Quote, I'm not sure if guys thought weather was coming or something like that, Bush said. You know, it's just Talladega. There's that line again. It's just Talladega. See, that's the line I keep coming back to. It is what it is. These cars, you try to get a little bit aggressive, start bumping people and pushing people. They're really easy to get out of control. I really don't know why we're bumping and pushing and everything else, because these cars, they go slower when you push. Makes a lot of sense. That's how stupid we are. So that was Kyle's comments coming back from it. And I think in some respects, he's echoing, Sidekick, what Brandon was just saying, that, hey, guys, we need to show some personal restraint. Maybe this thing has to be self-policed. You know, maybe that's the way it's got to go. That, you know, we can't have NASCAR involved in it. Don't have them laying down the law. Don't have there be mechanical changes. It's got to be self-policed. I don't know. Sidekick, what do you think?
Well, the real answer to it is you do away with the super speedways.
Well,
unfortunately, that's not really the answer everybody wants.
But after all the money they just spent on Daytona, that ain't happening.
Well, exactly. But if you really want, because what are you talking about? You're talking about either speeding the cars up, and the whole reason that they're restrictor plate tracks is because they're 2 miles, and the cars, the cars can go, they get phenomenal runs. You got 2 miles to run around a lap, so the speeds are just incredible. So they have to throw these restrictor plates in to slow them down some. Otherwise, they're just going to become rockets, essentially, on the track.
Sure, sure.
You know what I mean? So speeding them up, I don't think, is the answer.
Right.
Or letting them run more wide open so that maybe they get more spaced out. You know, because the problem is essentially you have 40 cars. They're all restricted to go so fast. That's why they're all pocketed together. And basically, aerodynamically, you get these little groups that break away, but they're still all looped, they're still all bunched together because they're limited on how fast they can go. So you're either, you either go wide open and just let anybody run, and you're, like I said, you're basically, riding rockets around a 2 mile track, or you slow it down, or you slow it down even more, and nobody can pass anybody. Everybody stays in these big packs, and it's either you have boring racing, or you have wrecks.
What have we been complaining about? We've been complaining about follow the leader. You're not getting follow the leader here. It sounds to me like we have to say, guys, you police yourself. That's the way it's got to go. I mean, I don't know else. What else can you do?
But the other side of that is, even if they do police themselves, you still have the person that occasionally dips down on somebody. Something happens to a car, and they still all wind up wrecking. Even if you had 40 perfect gentlemen on the track, or 39 perfect gentlemen and a lady on the track. you know what I mean? Somebody loses a tire or blows an engine or does something.
It's the nature of three wide.
Exactly. I mean, it's that's the just the way, three-wide. I don't know right now if we can even come up with a concept or comprehend how to make racing at a super speedway safer or less risk of the big one happening. Other than eliminating super speedway.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get, if you're racing three, sometimes four wide, you're going to get side draft. And when you get side draft, it's going to move things around. That's just physics. Oh, man, life. All right. I'm going to get Christian in here 1 second. If anybody wants to jump in with us, please. Hey, we're having a lively and debated conversation here about super speedways and whether, if anything, anything should really be done about it. 347-826-9964 is how you can get a hold of us here. 347-826-9964. Otherwise, as our good friend, loyal listener Liz is doing right now in the chat room, you can leave us a message in our Blog Talk Radio chat room. I'll take a look at her messages here momentarily and perhaps bring a couple of those to you. Or you can hit me up on Twitter at FratHouseMike. Right now, though, I got to get the opinion of our Friday night guest. Christian Coley is joining us from the NASCAR news source. Christian, it's Friday night. Thanks so much again for joining us in here. Oh, by the way, I just want to let you know, Christian, third time on the show, that automatically now makes you an honorary Frat House Sports friend. So you are a friend
awesome.
Of the show now. Yeah.
Awesome.
And that can never be taken away from you. So you've got that for life.
I put that on my resume.
Well, you know that you know what that means. He's entitled to.
Well, you can let him know.
I will as soon as I found the sign drop.
Oh. I think I'm looking for the same one too.
There we go.
There it is.
Oh, okay. There it is. All right. Hey, well, it is Friday night, so yeah, you know, and we're working a little overtime here at the garage, so I guess you can have one of.
What is that thing called with the beer again?
Yeah,
grab a beer, have a beer. What is what? Where is that sound drop?
Christian, we're talking. You know, there was a lot that came out of Sunday's race at Talladega, and particularly what came out of it. I don't know. There was a lot of chatter and talk about what can we do to fix the wreck. Plus, vehicles were incurred damage, and what can we do about this? And cars going everywhere. And I don't know. I'm coming on here tonight, and I'm asking both my guys here on the panel, and I'm asking you now. I was incredulous because I'm looking at it going, wait a minute, this is Dega. That's what happens. What does everybody expect? I don't get it. What are your thoughts on it all?
I think a lot of people, I think they got overwhelmed by it. It's not, I mean, yeah, you don't have almost three flips in one race. But I think people are overreacting to it because, I mean, it's Talladega. And the problem that I've noticed, and everybody's talking about how safety and how we're afraid that somebody's going to get killed. Well, somebody can get killed on a short track. I hate to say that it does not have to be Talladega. It can be a short track. It can be an intermediate. It doesn't matter if it's Talladega or Daytona. People can be killed on these tracks. And the flips can happen anywhere. It's just Talladega is a little more prone to it happening.
Right.
So I don't think anything needs to be done. I don't think anything needs to be changed. The race Sunday, in my opinion, was one of the best races I've seen, and I was there in person, and it was one of the best races I have seen in a while. You came down the end where there was drivers that had been in four or five wrecks and were still in contention for the victory. Michael McDowell was in two wrecks, and he was still in contention for the victory.
I agree. It was a good race. I think it was one of the better restrictor plate track races we've seen in a while. I think what it just comes down to, and I kind of think if you listen to the driver's comments, some of the more veteran guys are just saying, hey, we need to have a little bit more, you know, restraint at these tracks and look out for each other a little better, maybe a little less aggression. I don't know. Maybe I'm just reading into it, but that's the way I hear it. It's what it sounds like to me anyway. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
All of the wrecks, and I'm going to look at one wreck in particular where Michael McDowell was involved. It was in the case where Danica Patrick said Michael McDowell bumped her in the wrong way. And, well, I mean, that's the simple thing. If a car is going slower and a car picks up faster behind, there's going to be a wreck. I mean, you can't dodge it. I mean, at a track like that, if you dodge and weave, you'll learn, like Joey Logano did Saturday afternoon. You'll learn if you try to block and dodge and weave, you'll end up in the wall. and that I think NASCAR really can't step in and do anything about it because there's nothing they can really do, and there's nothing technical they can do without doing any drastic changes. And I think a lot of people are just overreacting and sit back and enjoy the show every week.
Our loyal listener, Liz, kind of echoing our sentiments as well in chat room. There's been wrecks at Dega and Daytona forever. It's the nature of the track. One of the comments that was made by one of the announcers on the air, trying to remember who it was, but one of them anyhow, made the comment, and I'm just wondering whether there's some motivation in some of this coming from the financial aspect of it. One of them made the comment that this is not what you want to see. If you're an owner, this is not what you want to be seeing. Because cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. I mean, how much of that is coming into play with some of the comments we're seeing? Or at least some of the sentiment coming out of it?
I personally think that a lot of teams are looking at it in the aspect where if there's some teams like Hendrick Motorsports who send four cars out there and they're just sending four cars to wreck. Okay, well, that's a big drop. That's a big giant. I mean, to Hendrick Motorsports, losing those four cars is really no big deal. Okay, they have the money to replace those four cars. If we can go back and let's go to the Xfinity Series, I'm going to use some Cup teams as an example. Teams like Derek Cope Racing, teams like Circle Sport Levine Family Racing, teams like Premium, if they're involved in one of those wrecks, there's a chance they may not show up the following weekend. They may not have a car prepared for the following weekend. And it's the risk you take. If you're going to sit around at home, or if you're going to sit around and say, well, I don't want my car to get wrecked. Well, you know the biggest way to guarantee that? Sit at home.
Don't
take
enter
the risk of them.
Don't enter it,
yeah.
Right.
If you're scared of wrecking, don't enter. I mean,
right.
There's the big chance that you could wreck your car, but you've got to think about the opportunity that you could have all 40 or all 39 cars wrecked. You be the sole car left. You go on a win, and the purse is pretty big. I mean,
yeah, well, I don't think there's any guarantee that they're going to wreck either, because if you remember, if you heard the winner's Victory Lane interview, the first thing they said to Brad Keselowski is, you might have the only car without a scratch on it. You know, you can. There's no guarantee the car is going to, you know, come out of there wrecked. I mean, it is what it is, you know. Some of it's luck. You know, if it's a mechanical thing like a tire going or something like that, you can't – there's not much you can do about it, you know, especially when they're running in the big packs like that, especially after a restart like we saw, you know, this week. I mean, you just got to expect it, I think. And, you know, if you're going to put the car on the track, you can't – it was Daryl and Jeff, you know, doing their little owner's whine about, you know, money and wrecking the car. And, you know, it is what it is, you know. Like you said, I don't think you race anything on any kind of track without, you know, knowing, hey, you might take this thing home on a wrecker. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. Sometimes Daryl Waltrip, I think, is just getting to the point of.
Sure.
It might be time to, you know. Put him out the pasture.
Sure.
I don't
know.
Go
ahead. I want to get to this in a couple of moments because Christian put out a piece about the underfunded teams, and I want to get to that in a couple of minutes here. You know, I hear what you're saying, Brandon, but at the same time, And maybe the only prudent way to approach this is, as Christian just said, or as I kind of echoed it as myself. If you don't have the budget, then don't enter. But then here's the problem: are we going to really start to see a diminishment of the field? And see that's the yin and yang of this sport, isn't it? I mean, how can you have a good field out there? And let me throw this concept out there for a moment now that I'm thinking about it, because Psychic, I wanted to get your thoughts as well too. You're saying you had made the comment earlier in the week. NASCAR is going about this the right way. They're going to investigate as to what put these cars airborne. Okay. What if they come back? What if NASCAR comes back and says, we believe that if we make these modifications physically to the car, it'll slow them down and that would be better. What do you say then to that idea, Sidekick?
Well, I mean, without seeing what the product's going to wind up looking at, it's kind of hard to say. But, you know, just if the blanket statement is we're going to slow the cars down to keep them from getting airborne, then I don't necessarily agree with that. You know what I mean? Because I don't think slowing down the cars is necessarily the best for the product. Now, if they say, hey, we're going to install some roof flaps and we're going to do something and we're going to lower, you know, we're going to try to lower the top end by 5 to 10 miles an hour. Okay. I could, you know, it's a couple different moving pieces, you know, and we'll see what the racing looks like. If it winds up that tandem racing they had a couple years ago that the fans absolutely hated, well, right, then we're going to, you know, then no, it's not good.
I was one of the very few people that actually liked tandem racing.
You did?
I actually did like the tandem racing.
Well, I mean,
I think the drivers were leery of it because of all the bump, you know, the bump drafting. You know, you're locked together. You know, you go into them turns and you're still bumping on the back. We've seen, you know, how that can end really bad really quickly.
Well, and Jeff Gordon said it. You know, you could probably play a drinking game the number of times he said it during Talladega. Don't hit the left rear corner.
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
You hit the right rear corner. Don't hit the left rear.
Mm-hmm.
If you hit the left rear, you will wreck. It's not a you might wreck. You will wreck if you hit that guy's left corner, you know? And unfortunately, when you're talking about two cars that are moving independently of each other that aren't necessarily, you know, knowing exactly what the other person's doing, the risk of you going to tap the right corner and then all of a sudden the guy slides up a little bit and now you're hitting that left corner, it's there. So, you know, super speedway racing is inherently dangerous.
Yeah.
More dangerous than other tracks, unfortunately.
All right. Let me throw another crazy idea out there. And, you know, look, I don't have any kind of experience in this per se, so I don't know what effect it would have, but I'll throw it out there just for argument and for conversation for a minute, because we're trying to fix this problem. Super speedways, we shorten the field. We don't have 40 cars. Does that make any difference? Christian?
If you shorten the field, you're going to have that field wrecked just as if you'd have 43, 67, 98 cars in it. I mean, that's the problem. Talladega is kind of the opposite of Bristol. Bristol is, and I've heard this term numerous times for Bristol, Bristol is a self-cleaning racetrack. Everything goes to the bottom. Talladega, if you run the top, it's a self-cleaning racetrack to the top. Everything that wrecks goes to the top. And if you're up there in the top and you have nowhere to go, so if you add cars and if you subtract cars, you're going to have more cars up top to where they can't get out. I mean, that's basically what it's going to come down to.
Can I tell you where I think NASCAR is going to look at things a lot in this particular instance of aftermath? If you notice, there was a lot of cars, especially the ones that flipped where the roof flaps were not deploying because of the angles, whatever caused it. You know, I'm sure it's all a physics thing of, you know, the angle and speed or whatever. I've often thought, and I'm sure there's probably no safe way to do it, the rear spoiler, when you turn the car around backwards, basically becomes the lift point. It's like a flap on an airplane. It's what makes the cars go airborne. So they have, you know, the roof flaps come out as kind of like air brakes. I've often thought, can't they develop some kind of technology that when the car goes around backwards, the rear spoiler falls forward? I would think that would be the kind of technology that would be required, you know, to help keep the cars, you know, planted a little bit when they start spinning. But, there's probably no easy way to do that. That's probably why they haven't. Or, you know, I don't know. To me, it seems like they need to pay more attention to keeping the cars from flipping, because that's when it seems to get out of hand.
I love it. You're getting into physics. I never took a physics class, so I have no way of. It sounded great, Brandon.
You're not a Ryan. You're not like
Ryan
Newman.
If you listen to the commentators, they even comment on some of these wrecks where the roof flaps weren't going. So,
well, the roof flaps weren't going, and that's something I've noticed all season long. Is with any spins, it used to be the fact where the roof flaps would come right up as somebody spun. Nowadays, it's like the roof flaps are having a hard time coming up, as if there's no air to go under them to lift them up. There's no hold. Because I've noticed that a lot this year, is that the roof flaps haven't been coming up very quickly.
That's interesting.
Maybe that's something we need to investigate.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I was going to bring up was, you know, you got to look at how these cars are being impacted, you know, because you can have the roof flaps and, you know, the collapsing rear spoiler and all that stuff. But if you slam into one of those cars and either the front end or the back end start to come up,
they're
going. You know, the bomb of that car is a giant wing, essentially. You know what I mean? And I'm wondering if that also played into it. Or, you know, you get a car sliding sideways, you know, because of it coming sideways, the air starts to get up under the side, you know, because all you have to do is tilt that car up just a little bit on the leading edge, and that thing's, you know, up, that thing's going to flip up in the air. You know, and that's why, you know, they've got the skirts and all that stuff on there to try and, you know, keep that air from getting underneath of them. To, you know, but if you tilt a car on any one of those axes up going into the wind, that thing's going to take off in the air. And that might, you know, that might be the other thing that they're looking at is, you know, and unfortunately, you know, when another car slams into another car, how do you keep that car from, you know, that leading edge from going up in the air and catching that air, you know?
Well, and it's interesting, one of the clips that I was looking at today in putting this program together and then looking for some sound for it, was the play-by-play, I guess, essentially, or thereafter, from Jeff Gordon when Matt Kenseth went airborne. And he said, essentially, Sidekick, exactly what you did right on the air, made reference to, look how strong the air can be when you're moving a vehicle of this weight at that speed and it turns upright, how strong that wind can be and how it carried it. So, you know, it's, you know, essentially saying basically the same thing you're saying. I don't know. Interesting. I'm reading all this stuff over the course of this past week, and I got to be honest with you guys. I'm coming back, and I'm kind of coming away with the initial kind of response and reaction that Sidekick had initially, and that was, well, you know, listen. Maybe these tracks just, if we don't have the stomach for it, then these tracks just can't be run, period. You can't run them like this. You know, take them off the circuit. But, see, that's not going to happen because that's what the fans want. So, you know, look, we're going to go to Talladega twice. We're going to go to Daytona twice. I don't know. Maybe we only go once to Talladega. I don't know. But any final thoughts from anybody on it? Yes, no? Okay.
Just go racing, boys.
That's it. I mean, I don't know.
All right. Safety measures.
Well, you know, we'll see. I guess we'll wait and see what NASCAR comes out of it with, because you know, we've heard they're taking a look at it and they're investigating it. Christian, I want to give you a couple of minutes here to kind of chit chat a little bit about a piece that you put out, and I picked it up and put it up over on our Frat House Sports Facebook page, and you kind of alerted me to it before you put it out. You kind of alluded to it as well earlier here, and that was a piece you put out about the underfunded teams. You know, ironically, we were just talking about some of the underfunded teams. Weigh in a little bit on what you found, I guess, coming out of Talladega too a little bit, huh?
Well, I got the chance to go to Talladega with Derek Cope Racing. I reached out to them and said, hey, I do some articles about your team in return for a hot pass, and I want to give a shout-out to them. I know some of them are listening right now, so I'd like to give a shout-out to some of the Derek Cope Racing people. Thank you for the passes. We hope to give you much success and hope to give you some good words out there. My deal with the underfunded teams this weekend was the fact that after Sunday, I heard a lot of negative comments about the underfunded teams, and I'm not going to state any names.
Wow.
I heard some negative comments about the underfunded teams, and hey, why are we making a big deal of the underfunded teams doing so well here when they just go on the next weekend and finish 37th? I mean, why are we making a big deal of that? And I found, and I kept hearing these things that people were saying, well, the underfunded teams don't matter. These teams don't matter. They don't matter. These teams, they're irrelevant. They're crowd fillers, they're field fillers. They're the cards that get lapped down each week. Yes, that's true. They get lapped down each week. But these are the teams that work twice as hard as the higher money teams with only 25%, if that much, of their funding. And you see teams like Matt DiBenedetto and BK Racing. You see teams like Michael McDowell get a lot of television time Sunday. These drivers have the talent. They just don't have the ride to show the talent. And that's where I'm happy to see some drivers get an opportunity in higher money Xfinity rides. Like Michael McDowell's gotten a chance to do it numerous years. He's gotten a chance to drive for Joe Gibbs and finish second at Iowa to Brad Keselowski. Okay, tell me how that guy doesn't have talent. I mean, and that's my problem with people, is they downgrade the underfunded teams. They knock them down. They act like it's a fun, good old time. Hey, we're going to knock down the little kids because they can't bug us. And the problem is the little teams can't do anything. If they come back at any of the media people, the media will bury them. And that's my problem, is that the media is too quick to criticize a team for what they say than to praise them for what they just did. It got to the point on Tuesday, I was getting really tired of it. I have a ton of friends in the underfunded team. I have a ton of friends that work in underfunded teams. I have a ton of friends that are drivers for underfunded teams. And I feel like I need to be the voice of the voiceless, the ones that can't talk about who they are, the ones that when they tell people who they are, nobody cares or nobody pays attention. And with my blog success, I feel that's one of the best ways to get the case out for the underfunded teams.
Well, exactly. You know, that's the thing with, you know, you have to start out somewhere in the sport. If you're going to come, not everybody can come in and be a, I don't know, a Michael Waltrip Racing or, you know, a Hendricks or something like that. You know, you see somebody, you know, yes, some of the teams, they don't ever really get going. They're always an underfunded team. And it's just because it's so hard to break into the sport, you know, with funding and everything. But then you do have some teams. You have some, like Furniture Row or some of these other teams where, you know, they come in, they're a one-car shop, you know, they struggle for a couple years, they finally get a program going, you know, and then, then they're a two-car team. And, you know, unfortunately, what sucks is that there's not more success stories with these teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I think,
But
speaking of Furniture Row, Furniture Row just won the pole for tomorrow's race.
Exactly, Martin. With Martin Truex Jr. there, you know. But you know, I like it when I see a Matt DiBenedetto in the top 10, or you know, like you were saying, Michael McDowell and some of these, you know, some of these other smaller teams, you know, because they're, you know, yes, they're competitive, you know, no, they're not a Hendricks or anybody else, but you know, they deserve to be there just like everybody else does. You know what I mean? So, and it's a shame that people knock them, you know, and stuff. And unfortunately, I think part of that comes from the whole, that whole start and park mentality where people were getting frustrated with teams that would show up, run a couple laps, and then park the car.
Well, that's almost, that's a thing of the past almost now.
Well, right.
So.
But
I agree.
Sentiment,
now, there are some start and park teams in the Xfinity series now.
Oh, are there?
Yes.
Yeah, but I'll tell you,
I didn't think it was cost effective in that series. I didn't think the bottom spots paid enough to make that worth doing.
You don't see it in Sprint Cup, though. I'll tell you, like you were seeing it even 4 and 5 years ago.
No.
But let's get this one straight. You know, and listen, I'll leave all the physics stuff to Brandon because he's got that one down pat. So I can't jump in on that conversation, but. When we start getting into dollars and cents and finance and business, yeah, then I can get into it. And let's get it straight, guys. This is all about sponsorship. And sponsorship is finite in this business. Why? Because it's a niche sport. That's the problem.
It's not.
Go ahead.
It's not as niche as, say, NHRA, where we see, you know, We've talked on the show many times about sponsorship dollars in NHRA, and you know that really is niche. I don't know if NASCAR is, if you really would call it a niche sport. I mean, sure, it's smaller than say the NFL and NBA, you know, and but I don't know if I'd necessarily say it is niche. But the dollars are definitely, I think, drying up.
Let me
economy downturn, you know, if, you know, when things start taking off again, you might see more of a, you know,
I think you're starting to see a turnaround a little bit.
Right.
We are seeing new sponsors pop up that we haven't seen before, which is good. You know, I think that's always been the thing with NASCAR is, you know, a lot of times you'd see sponsors, you know, move from one car to another, that kind of thing. It's nice seeing newer coming in, you know. Older NASCAR, obviously, you'd see like the same paint job on the car for every race, you know, the same sponsor. Now you see, you know, shared deals where you have, you know, like Carl Edwards, he'll have, you know, Aris on the one week, he'll have Xfinity on, he'll have Subway on. Yeah, you know, I think that's good to see all the different, even if they're not doing a whole season, you're seeing more and more, you know, little pieces, you know, sponsors come in. I think that's good for the sport.
Well, that's just smart. That's just smart business. Yeah, that's smart business and marketing on the part of the person that's coordinating things over with that team. But, Christian, talk to us, because obviously you've got your ear to the ground with these underfunded teams. It's got to be a struggle for them to get – that's what it comes down to, right? They just can't get the sponsor dollars. And with a team like Furniture Row, what's helped them out has been success. So success builds on success, builds on success, and that draws the sponsors. If you're not having the success, then you're not going to draw the sponsors. It's pure and simple, right?
Yeah.
So the job that these guys have got, you know, whoever that business manager or the business managers are that are out there trying to get the sponsor dollars, they're working 3 and 4 times. To get the kinds of results that, you know, a Furniture Row is getting, right?
Well, in some cases, these underfunded teams don't even have a manager. They don't have somebody to go out and look for sponsorship for them. And that's where I come in. That's where I come in with a couple of the teams. I will come in and each team has a sponsorship. I call them packets. there's a sponsorship packet that tells them details about stats about NASCAR, and then it tells them how much they want for, let's say, a spot on the hood, a spot on the deck lid, a spot
right.
on the TV panel.
Right.
And I will take those and email them to sponsors and say, hey, would you be interested in sponsoring this team? I would give them a good word, say, hey, this team's a good team. And in most cases, the teams are good teams. And there's drivers out there that need the chance, they just never get it. And that's the problem in the Xfinity Series, is that Kyle Busch has come in here with his high dollars, and he's robbing the wins and everything from the little guys. Like, I'm going to use he drove the 31 car. I can't think of his name. He had
okay.
Kwasniewski, Dylan, or Kwasniewski. Yeah, Kwasniewski. He drove the 31 car there for a few weeks, and it got to the point where there was no funding on the car. And Kwasniewski has a ton of talent. Kwasniewski has a talent. Kwasniewski has the personality to be a very successful driver. Well, without the money, and when Kyle Busch comes in here, steals the wins from Kwasniewski, Kwasniewski falls to these little rides, and then in 3 or 4 years, well, who in the world was Dylan Kwasniewski? The same thing with Jason Bowles. Jason
right.
Bowles had a lot of potential, and then he got beat by Kyle Busch and Brad Keselowski and Joey Logano. Completely disappeared. Nobody's heard from him since. He's not been
mm-hmm.
in a car since Eldora.
Hmm. Well, there's no better, I'm always the one out here sounding the clarion call for, you know, this whole situation over at NHRA. It would seem to me that it benefits NASCAR all the way around when they've got a full field. And that full field requires that you've got teams out there that are fully funded, or at least, you know, modestly funded to the extent that they can fill your fields each week. I don't know. Guys, I mean, are NASCAR fans, is it the nature of the NASCAR fan where seriously, I got to be honest with you. How much does seeing a sponsor on a car drive any of us here really to go and support that particular product?
I know me personally, it pushes me to buy their product. I'll give a huge shout out to a product that I've used, and I used it last weekend. It's iSaid with Derek Cope Racing, and I've gotten numerous bags of their products. Works tremendously. I mean, it keeps the ice cold, and that's in the case where there's a lot of people, if you see that on a car, you're going to go, ooh, well, I like them, and you're going to go to Walmart, and you're going to have these little kids that see Nature's Bakery. Let's use Danica. These little kids who are big Danica fans walk to Walmart with their parents. They walk down this aisle, and they see this blue and white packaging that looks just like Danica's car. How do you think that kid's going to react? I mean, and he or she is going to beg her parents to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that appeals Kyle Busch to the younger fans because of
mm-hmm.
the fact of M&M's.
The candy.
M&M's is made just up the road from where I live. So, I mean, you know, it gets to the point where you see these sponsors, and you know there's backing to the sponsors, and you know that sponsor's in there to get their product out.
Well,
and,
exactly.
And doing the sponsorship stuff, I've learned about a ton of new products. 2 years ago, if you would ask me what iSaid was, I'd never heard of it.
Right.
And now it's like, okay, well, I know what that is. It's a Derek Cope. Or I hear 3M. I still think Greg Biffle. I hear Bass Pro Shops. I think the Dillons. Miller Lite. You think Brad Keselowski. I mean, it's you liken that brand to a driver. And if that driver really represents that brand well, that brand will be remembered forever in NASCAR. Prime example, STP.
Yeah.
I mean, how many years have we been bringing up to STP? And STP doesn't even sponsor a car every year.
Listen, STP was part of my, you know, we had to study that one back in advertising class back in the 80s. Are you kidding me? So that's a classic case. I'm well aware of it. But let's just say, for instance, you know, you're hitting me up. I don't know what kind of a product I got, but you're hitting me up. And you're asking me, and all I can do is take out a little tiny sticker on the back rear bumper that may or may not even get seen because it's on a car that's in the rear of the pack, and you're asking me for, you know, X number of dollars. I got to be honest with you. I'm sitting back going, I don't know. And yet, isn't it the little dollars that are going to make this train run?
Yeah. It's in my opinion with the grandstands. Okay, my opinion of the grandstands, and I know I've heard a ton about Bristol being empty. Everybody's letting me know that Bristol was empty. I saw it with my own two eyes. I knew that Bristol was empty. Well, Bristol's $97 a ticket, and who's going to have the money? My idea is to change it into a general admission idea. $30 for a ticket to go see the Cup race at Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to sell out that stadium at $30 a piece. Now, would you rather sell out an arena or sell out a track with over 160,000 seats at $30 a pop? Or would you rather sell five $97 tickets? Because those $30 tickets, those fans will look at it. And I spoke with a lot of fans about this past weekend in Talladega about how their opinion of ticket prices. And a lot of the fans agreed with me. If you pay $30 for a ticket, you are more than likely to go buy a beer or buy a T-shirt, or buy a program than you would be if you bought a $97 ticket.
Yep.
It's economics. I took 2 days of economics, and that's not really even economics. It's rockets. It's not rocket science. It's common sense,
mm-hmm.
is it? The average NASCAR fan is not going to put out $97 for a ticket. It just won't happen. Most of the people that are NASCAR fans are blue-collar people. And that's what I learned this weekend is I met a lot of blue-collar people. And they looked at me and asked me why I was wearing jeans. I wear jeans, a T-shirt, and a hat into the garage, while most media members dress up in a button-up, khaki pants. And I say, well, I want you to look at me as a rider. I want you to look at me as a blue-collar person, and I'm not looking down on you. I'm looking at you, and I want your opinion. And that's how I think NASCAR needs to look at it, is that we want your opinion. They're not listening to the right people.
Interestingly, being in the sponsorship area that you are now, there have got to be demographics that have been done on market appeal from NASCAR, not from individual teams, but from NASCAR on high. Do NASCAR fans support sponsors because of, as you say, brand appeal? Because, hey,
yes.
This driver support – is that actually happening?
Yes, it actually
okay.
is happening.
All right. Okay.
I know I have a ton of friends who, you know, a couple weeks at Richmond, you know, Chase Elliott and Casey Kane and Dale Earnhardt Jr. ran Mountain Dew scenes. They ran the decision. Well, this last weekend at Talladega, I saw a ton of people have the decision in their coolers with a nice package of ice aid sitting in their coolers prepared to drink. And that's something that draws to the fans. Beer is a tremendous, tremendous example of that. You do not see the brands like Jaeger Ale or whatever it is. You don't see the unsponsored beers at NASCAR anymore. You see Busch. You see Miller Lite. You see Budweiser.
There's no IPAs. There's no IPAs there.
No. Well, you've got those few City Boy NASCAR fans that come to the race, and they do have those. But most of the time it's Busch, Budweiser, Miller Lite, Red's Apple Ale, or the beers like that, Coors Light, you'll have the beers like that. And otherwise, and you can't come to me and say, well, just because Dale Earnhardt Jr. is sponsored by Budweiser there for a few years, that the fans don't still acknowledge that he was sponsored by Budweiser almost 10 years ago. They still acknowledge it today. Budweiser and Dale Jr. is just like STP and Richard Petty. Even though Richard Petty is not even racing anymore, or not even, or just because Dale Jr. is not sponsored by Budweiser anymore, doesn't mean the driver or the fans take that away from them. Now, I know I will be less likely, and I know this is something that not many people will say, I will be more or less likely to go out and buy a Sprint phone after this season than I have in the past, because the Sprint leaving is the entitlement sponsor, because he wants to go sponsor soccer. Okay, you can go sponsor soccer all you want. You're not getting my support. And that's my opinion, is if I can go out and help a sponsor that helped my driver, like Thrivent Financial and K-Love Radio, I will listen to K-Love Radio more than I did before they sponsored Michael McDowell. And that's in the main case because, well, K-Love is a good radio station, and K-Love is a very good – it's a good radio station, and it sponsors Michael McDowell. It helps my favorite driver. And I think NASCAR fans look at that, hey, that one's helping my favorite driver become better. So, hey, why don't I turn around and put my money into them? Then, in a way, the fan feels like he's putting money into his favorite driver.
All right. Interesting conversation. I want to real quick, before I move along here, I want to throw it open to Brandon and Sidekick for a second here. Does driver sponsorship motivate you guys in one way or another? I'm just curious. Have you been motivated by driver sponsorship at some point or another in your time as a consumer?
Well, actually, yeah, absolutely. Go ahead, Psychic.
I was going to point it back to Fred House Mike. Why is Fred House Mike a Kyle Busch fan?
Well, because of M&M's, but the M&M's thing came first, and then Kyle came afterward.
Right. So that was a reverse, but it's kind of the same, you know, the same thing. I mean, when Tony Stewart was with Joe Gibbs Racing, I always went to Home Depot. I never went to Lowe's. I despised Lowe's.
But okay,
because Jimmy Johnson was their
sponsor. Because of Tony. Did you go because of Tony, or did you go because, as you just pointed out, you despised Lowe's?
No. I went to Home Depot because of Tony. I refused to go to Lowe's because of Jimmy Johnson.
I've actually met a ton of fans that will do that.
You know,
they
like,
will not buy
like
the
last year,
because...
you sure heard all the Logano fans that said they would never step foot in a Dollar General again.
I'm sadly one
Some,
of those people.
There are fans that
I'm sadly
are
one
like
of those
that.
People.
They're dead loyal to their driver, and they're dead loyal to the driver's sponsors.
Okay. All right. You guys are proving. Okay, you're proving my question, and you know, listen, I'm a marketer, and if the demos are there, you know, Liz, our loyal listener, Liz in our chat room. I only buy Scott products now and Busch beans.
Okay, good. She's an AJ Allmendinger fan.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
I'll give her a shout out on that.
Yep. So I mean,
the team.
You guys are proving my point. I mean, listen, I'm not going to buck the marketing trend. If the marketing trend is there, I was just questioning and doubting whether in fact it truly was.
So now that you've heard about iSaid, will you go out to Target and participating stores and buy you a case of iSaid just to see if it works?
I'll tell you this much. I will take a look. I'll go on their website and take a look at their product and see what exactly it is and how it might benefit. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it got my interest perked that way. Brandon,
well, here's an example. I'm watching Talladega. And I'm looking at Kyle Busch's car, and, you know, he had Banfield on the hood. My dogs are insured through Banfield. You know,
oh,
I have
okay.
their pet insurance. So I'm like, Jen, hey, look, Kyle Busch has Banfield on his car.
Yeah, I think it's cool when you walk through the garage and you see those cars and you see products that you use. You know,
yeah.
Hey, I didn't know that.
Or you see that little sticker. Right, or you see that little sticker and you're like, you know, and it's, you know, I don't know, Zippy's, you know, whatever cream.
Zippy's.
And you're
zippers.
Like, what? What the heck is that? Next thing you know, you're Googling Zippy's whatever cream.
Yeah.
The Piggly Wiggly, right?
Yeah,
there.
You know.
I wish Piggly Wiggly would sponsor a car.
Piggly Wiggly sponsors Fusion.
I was going to say, the Piggly Wiggly's got Sidekick's car.
Yeah, and the Goody's Headache Powder. It's the Piggly Wiggly Goody's Headache Powder Ford Fusion.
You need a headache powder after you say Piggly Wiggly in that.
Oh, very good. Real quick, Brandon,
at least,
have you ever been motivated by a car sponsor?
Absolutely. If I have a choice between products and, you know, there's one out there that's sponsored by, you know, a driver, I tend to go after that product over another. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, you get used to seeing their brand on the car, you know, that kind of thing. It's neat, you know, like Christian was pointing out with the Mountain Dew thing. You know, it's a cool way for some of these sponsors to introduce new products that you might want to go try. You know,
mm-hmm.
You see a new flavor of Mountain Dew, you might want to say, hey, I might like that. I mean, Mountain Dew ain't my thing. I'm a Dale Jr. fan, you know, and it's not going to make me go get more Mountain Dew, I will say, because I don't like Mountain Dew soda as a general rule. But, you know, I will say this. If something sounds good that one of my guys, that any guy really endorses, you know, I'd definitely give it a try.
Did you try that banana mayo sandwich?
No.
Yeah, really.
I
will say
I did try that. I did try the banana mayo sandwich.
Get out. Go ahead. Give your
I took a bite of it and I threw the rest of it away. It was terrible. anybody paying $5 for that.
Exactly.
And
why
much they were charging for it? $5?
$5
what was
$5 if it goes toward the Junior Foundation.
Oh, that's true. They did raise a lot of money, though, for
here,
you know,
just
those
take
charities.
$5. I don't want your sandwich.
Exactly. Exactly. you know, it was crazy because, I mean, Brandon, didn't you bring it up and go, who's going to buy that? And I said, listen, I'm going to tell you something. There's going to be a load of people that are going to buy that just for the novelty.
Right. Oh, yeah. Like I just said, I'm a huge Dale Earnhardt Jr. fan. There's no way I'd even try that. I have this aversion to mayonnaise. It just sounds that sandwich sounds disgusting straight out.
Well,
mayonnaise and bananas. Are you kidding me?
Oh, man. Outstanding. All right. I'm gonna move it along at this point. Christian, I want to thank you for jumping on with us here this evening. Friday night, we will get you back in here, I guess, on a Friday night. Wow, it'll be the beginning of July if I'm looking at the calendar correctly, I think, the next time. So we'll get you back in here then at that point. Appreciate you being here this evening. And but great stuff. We appreciate all the – I mean, it gave us an opportunity to get into a conversation we really haven't had, and that's – you know, about sponsorship and all that sort of thing. So appreciate it.
By the time we are in July, we are going to start. We are actually today we announced formally that we are going to begin covering the Pinty series in Canada. So be watching my blog for the Pinty series. And then we are creeping up on 100,000 views all time.
Awesome. Awesome. That's right. And your website address, the NASCARnewsSource.blogspot.com, folks. That's how you can get there. The NASCAR
maybe
dot,
it may be changing
dot
soon.
Okay. All right. Well,
we may be changing it soon because we don't want to get attacked by NASCAR, so we may change the NASCAR name. And so we're working towards some pretty big things coming up. So
let us know and can put it up over or give it up to me, and then I'll put it up over on our Frat House Sports Facebook page.
Absolutely.
But make sure everybody get over there and check it out, and also check out our Frat House Sports Facebook page, and you'll see Christian's writings over there frequently. As I just pointed out, I had posted up the underfunded teams article from just the other day that we just got done chatting about. Christian, thanks a lot, my friend. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All righty. Take care.
You too.
All right. There you go. Interesting stuff. We hadn't gotten into that sort of thing, so I'm glad that we had an opportunity to do that. Before we get into, we are going to go a little bit over time, and I kind of had planned on that a little bit, and that's fine if we go a couple of minutes over time here this evening. Touch real quick here, guys. We got Kansas tomorrow night, and as Christian had just alluded to, qualifying just concluded. Everybody ready for the JGR show? I mean, seriously, here's the qualifying order for tomorrow night. Martin Truex Jr., Matt Kenseth, Denny Hamlin. There's your 1, 2, 3. Kurt Busch, Keselowski is number 5. Kyle Busch comes in at 6. Carl Edwards is coming in at 12. Oh, man alive. The JGR show goes on. So qualifying has concluded. Camping World Truck Race is going on right now live as we speak. We're going to Kansas, a mile and a half. I had alluded to the fact at the beginning of the program it might be a little bit more docile. Sidekick said, well, maybe not. Watch Logano and Kansas. We'll see how that goes. Where did Matt Kenseth? Kenseth is 2. Where's Joey Logano on the qualify? Logano's 14th. Now, what do we have coming out of Kansas? Kansas, Jimmy Johnson's a 3-time winner, the only one. Of course, we haven't been racing here that long. So Jimmy Johnson, 3-time winner. Your 2-time winners include Greg Biffle. I don't think so this week. Matt Kenseth, Joey Logano, and Tony Stewart. Stewart is running tomorrow, I believe, right? Yes, he's running out of 16, actually. I'm looking right at the qualifying list. So he's going to...
Yeah, he's running a full.
He's going to run the whole race, correct. Thoughts on Kansas, guys? Nighttime racing, I like nighttime racing.
Yeah, I liked Kansas when I went out there last year for the race.
That's right, you were there. It was this time too, right? Yeah, it was this time. You weren't there. Yeah, you were there for the spring race, right?
Yeah. Uh huh. Nice track too. Really nice.
That's one of the newer tracks too. So
that's
pretty nice facility, I would imagine.
We haven't raced there that long.
No. I think it looks good on television. From what I've seen, Sidekick's been there, so we're getting the, on the ground kind of thing. You already kind of alluded to what this race is going to be. I mean, it's another JGR show. I mean, they got, 4 out of the top 6? Is that the way it works out if you count Truex in there?
Yep.
Carl Edwards is down to 12.
Yep.
I think that pretty much says all you need to say. One thing I will say is, looking at the qualifying order, is you got Stenhouse in 9th and Trevor Bayne in 10th. It looks like the Roush Fenway cars are finally starting to find a little something. They've been making a little noise. Yeah, so that's probably a good thing. Maybe get a little bit more than just Penske representing Ford. Flying a blue and white flag all of a sudden, but it's good to see a little competition. Hendrick
7th. We've talked a little bit. Yeah, right. Blaney's coming in at 7th. We've talked a little bit about Stenhouse this year and some of his performances. He's actually, I think, performed fairly well this season. So I think Stenhouse is one of those ones that, we talked about it, a week or two ago. Sidekick, you were kind of putting him in different classes. And Stenhouse is in kind of that, still that young, up-and-coming sort of class. But I think he's made a lot of steps forward so far from what we've seen this year. Stenhouse might actually be I think Stenhouse will probably be a consideration to get back on my fantasy team this week. I have a sneaky suspicion. Almendinger, loyal listener, Liz is Almendinger. Dinger coming in 29 on the qualifying board. So just as an FYI, Junior coming in 22. So anyhow, well, let's do this. Let's jump around, and we will get to we need to get a little fantasy chit-chat in here. Okay, there we go. Thank you very much. Hello.
Yeah.
Hello. My sound effects are not.
Soundboard.
Soundboard says we've had enough. Go ahead. Sidekick, what do you got for us for what are you doing with fantasy this week? I haven't made up my mind yet.
I know. This always sucks for me on Friday night.
I know. Doesn't it?
I got a pick, and everybody else gets to sit back and wait till tomorrow.
And laugh at you.
You know? I mean, you know.
Exactly. Thank you very much.
Oh, man. So, looking at my roster, I sat down, I thought about it, and decided that I'm Team Iron Man. since Civil War's out. I'm going to run.
Glad to see you have a goal since you're getting older.
Yeah. So, Kevin Harvick, number 4. Number 18, Kyle Busch. I'm going to go with the 3-time winner here because obviously, you know, qualifying just finished up. So I kind of, you know, I went with the numbers on this. So I went with Jimmy Johnson. And then obviously I'm running Matt DiBenedetto and Regan Smith. And I went with Jimmy Johnson and Chevy. For my eat my dust pick, though, I'm going to go with the pole sitter, Martin Truex Jr.
There's dead air because I'm writing things down here, folks. Sorry about that. To give you an up-to-date on our Eat My Dust, 4 out of 5 of us last week picked Dale Jr. and got a whopping 1 point out of it. So, the standings right now, Sidekick, you're still leading, 293.
I don't know how, however, I'm still leading.
Liz, however, had Matt Kenseth, and, he had a little conversation with Joey Logano at the end, so as you might imagine, he dropped off a few points. Loyal listener Liz ended up with 281 right now. Brandon's at 262. Scar John is at 254, and I'm at 240. All right, so Sidekick is picking Truex Jr. You're not going to like this. Liz picked Truex Jr. NASCAR John picking Kevin Harvick. Brandon, who you got?
I'm going to go for a back-to-back winner. I don't think Brad Keselowski is going to pull this one off. So I'm going
Keselowski for Brandon. And yes, we've talked about this all season long. He's been snake bit all year, but I'm going to go with Matt Kenseth is going to win this Sunday, or Saturday, tomorrow night. I'm going to go with Kenseth. So there you go. There are our Eat My Dust picks. All right, there you have it. That's our program for this evening. Race tomorrow evening, 7:30 p.m., and we are in Kansas. Before then, however, I'll tell you what you want to be doing. You want to be tuning in tomorrow afternoon at about 2 p.m. Eastern Time right here to the Frat House Sports Radio Network, where you will be able to hear yours truly. Frat House Mike will be joining you here at 2 p.m. to bring you another relaxed Frat House Saturday program. Be here with me. Love to have a little bit of company. Maybe even a phone call or two. Be nice. So jump in here with me tomorrow afternoon at 2 p.m. and then be back here with us next Thursday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Time for our Frat House Sports Show, our flagship program, number 244, coming to you next Thursday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Many, many thanks to our guest this evening, Christian Coley, the NASCAR news source. Go over there and check out what he's doing. He's got a monster website over here, folks. NASCARnewsSource.blogspot.com. This guy puts up probably 4, 5, 6 articles a day, honestly. Get over there and check out what Christian is putting up there. And many thanks to him for jumping in here with us this evening with really great insight and input from everything he brought to us. Many thanks to everybody that has listened in, loyal listener Liz and everybody else out there, and to my crew here, Sidekick and Brandon, as always. Enjoy the race tomorrow night, and make sure you're here with me, please, tomorrow afternoon at 2 p.m., and we'll be going over all the other stuff that's going on in sports, you know.
Enjoy the races tomorrow.
Absolutely, we have a derby race tomorrow. How did you say
the
it
yesterday? Derby.
Derby. The derby.
The derby.
The derby.
yes.
And we will have, I have a graphic that I'll be putting up of our picks. I did up a graphic of our picks for the derby. That'll be up over on our Frat House Sports Facebook page by tomorrow morning. So you'll want to be checking that out.
I can't wait for the race.
And listen, I actually have it worked out where there will be a points assigned. And then what we're going to do is we'll do it for the next one, which, what's the second one? The Preakness. The Preakness comes, and then we'll have the Belmont. And so
we're going to do it for the trifecta, huh?
We'll do the three of them, yes. We will do the three of them. We'll make the picks on all three of them. So get out there and, hey, tune in to me tomorrow afternoon, 2 p.m. We'll be talking derby stuff tomorrow afternoon. And a whole bunch of other stuff. Major League Baseball, NHL, NBA, you know, the regular run-of-the-mill, boring kind of stuff. Thanks very much for tuning in with us here tonight as we kept the garage open a little bit later. Catch you tomorrow afternoon at 2 p.m.